Podcast Macabre, Episode 22, Blind Man's Bluff by Brian G. Ross. Hi, welcome to Cast Macabre, I'm Barry, your host. This week's story is Blind Man's Bluff by Brian G. Ross. You can find more about him and his work at www.briangross.blogspot.com. It is narrated and performed by Rish Outfield and Big Anklevich of the June Steve podcast. If you liked today's episode and want to hear more, there's over 80 episodes to listen to over at junesteve.com. Their shows are always really well produced and feature some great in-depth discussion, peppered with just the right amount of shits and giggles. Now, Rish and Big have a tale to tell you.
Blind Man's Bluff by Brian G. Ross. Puffs of gray slid across the night sky like smoke from an old man's pipe. The moon was full and sat boldly in the black. Celestial bodies twinkled even through the soup of fog that curled around the hilltops, and fat flakes fluttered in the wind. Somewhere below all of that, Jerry stopped talking about his divorce because, all of a sudden, Gordon had stopped listening. At the very least, before he had feigned interest. Gordon stood on the spot with his lips pursed and his finger to them. "Do you hear that?" He grabbed Jerry's shoulder.
"Hear what?"
"Shh! Keep it down." His eyes darted this way and that. The trees wore white coats. Gordon zipped up his. "I think they're getting closer." Jerry shrugged him off.
"Who is?"
"I'm not sure, but they're out there." Gordon rubbed his hands together, cupped them, and blew into them, momentarily relieving the sharp, icy chill. "I can't believe I left my gloves back at the lodge." Jerry listened.
"I can't hear a thing. Now keep moving. This cold will grab you by the balls if you stand still too long."
He started circling the fire they had built, big sticks scooshing in the snow. When he saw he wasn't stopping, Gordon followed. As the silence between them went on, the elements became more inclement. The snow was heavier now, the fog thicker. Clouds hung low, pregnant, and streaked across the sky. The moon was nowhere to be seen, where only moments ago it had stared down upon them with its omniscient eye. "I thought you people were supposed to have ears like elephants," he said, catching up.
"What people?"
"You know, blind folk." Jerry laughed.
"You mean ears like a dog?"
"Huh?"
"Elephants have big ears. But they haven't got better hearing for it. Dogs, now they can hear a fart on the dark side of the moon."
"Whatever." The wind slapped the trees like an angry lover.
"It's an urban myth anyway,"
Jerry assured him.
"Can't see shit, can't hear nothing either, except you, that is."
He smiled, throwing it at him like it was an accusation. "Well, I ain't crazy. Sounds like some kind of wild animal."
"Get a grip of yourself, Gordon. It's bad enough we may have to sleep out here without you giving us nightmares as well."
"Oh, Christ, I hope not." Gordon stopped and sat on a rock that poked out from the snow, turned up his collar, and pulled his head in like a tortoise. "We'll freeze to death."
"If we're not eaten first."
"Oh, gee, thanks." He looked at Jerry and, seeing the smile, realized he still possessed that sick sense of humor, even out here at 15 below. "The snow came in without warning. I've never seen anything like it."
"Me neither."
This time, either Gordon missed the punchline or chose to ignore it. "Don't worry," he said. "I called the backup team. They gave me hell for coming out here in this, but they said they'd be here in 2-3 hours tops."
"I'm not worried."
It was Jerry's turn to stop. He felt around for a resting place of his own. Gordon was about to get up to help him, but Jerry found an outcrop with his gloved hand and lowered himself next to the fire.
"Calm down. We've got a good fire going. Eddie and the boys will see the smoke and come get us out of here."
"Who are you trying to kid? I can't even see the hand in front of my face." He tried, wiggling his numb fingers back and forth, only inches away from his nose. He could just make out the pale blue skin in the dark fog. He stopped, afraid that if he continued, his fingers would drop off one by one into the snow. Jerry smiled.
Look, just sit down next to the fire and be quiet. Conserve your energy.
I am sitting down.
Good.
What do you mean I should conserve my energy? Gordon sat on his hands, but there didn't seem to be any heat in his thermal trousers. He put each in turn in his mouth instead, but the sudden temperature change was more painful than soothing. He resorted to hovering them over the flame. Why the hell aren't you cold?
I am.
You don't look it. Jerry shifted on his rock and adjusted his glasses.
It's mind over matter, my friend.
As dark as the night was around them, those glasses were a shade more so. His cheeks rode high, a healthy pink, his full lips pressed together, similarly bright and ripened by a flick of the tongue. His sharp nose blossomed red across the bridge, like a man who has blown it too hard, and a glob of snot hung from its point. Jerry lifted his nose.
We must be near Cooper's Point.
He sensed Gordon's unasked question.
It's in the air.
Gordon felt around for his map, but like them, it was lost. We can't be at Cooper's Point. When we took off, we were nowhere near there.
Well, we're near there now.
Again, he sniffed. Gordon forced a laugh. What? You can smell it? Jerry nodded.
I told you, it's in the air. I'd say we're about 5, maybe 10 miles off course.
He sniffed the passing wind like a dog chasing his next meal.
Due east.
You're having me on. Gordon tried to inhale the night theatrically. But in the company of a blind man, he wasn't embarrassed. I can't smell anything. It's too damn cold. Jerry was about to say something when the night beat him to it. A sudden rush of wind tore across their makeshift camp, and the flame almost danced itself out. After a moment, it settled, and beyond the soundtrack of the night, Gordon began to let his imagination get the better of him. There! He pointed off into the blizzard, but just as quickly dropped his arm by his side again, realizing the futility of it all. Over there!
What is it?
Don't know. A bear, maybe.
There's no bears in Scotland.
Or a wolf.
No wolves either,
Jerry said, his measured tone countering Gordon's exuberance.
Unless you count werewolves, that is.
What?
I'm just pulling your leg. Christ, you're tighter than my ex-wife.
Not funny. Gordon hugged himself. Why the hell did I let you come all the way out here anyway?
I don't see how you had a choice in the matter. I'm 46 years old, and if I want to go hill climbing, I'll jolly well go hill climbing. If I want to run naked down Oxford Street, I'll damn well do that too. And there isn't a bloody thing you can do about it.
Jerry paused to let the wind get a few words in.
Of course, you didn't have to come with me. Nobody held a gun to your head.
Yeah, well, next time you're on your own. Jerry leaned forward.
People get lost whether they have eyes or not.
Gordon waved away the attempted profundity and shook his head.
It's nobody's fault,
Jerry finished. I'm not 8 years old anymore. Grown men don't get lost.
Sure they do. If Christopher Columbus knew where he was going and how to get there, nobody would have ever heard of him.
How the hell can you get lost going up a mountain?
I guess we went left when we should have gone right.
Huh?
Or right when we should have gone left?
Don't talk stupid, Gordon lambasted. We're going up, right?
Yeah.
So left and right doesn't matter, does it? As long as we're going up. Jerry had to smile at his friend's logic.
Well, whatever way you want to look at it, we are lost, that's for sure.
Gordon looked into the blizzard thoughtfully, an intense look of concentration on his face. Trees talked to each other, like old friends. Turning to Jerry, he said, I think we should get rid of the fire. It attracts too much attention.
We want to attract attention. How are the guys going to find us without the flame?
The wolves will get here before Eddie does, no question. Gordon reached inside his jacket and pulled out his gun. His hand trembled, one part cold, one part fear, and it was all he could do to keep from falling to the ground.
Put that thing away, will you, before you shoot your dick off.
I won't let them take me without a fight. Gordon aimed into the black, at nothing, and wondered how close whatever it was that was out there would have to be before he could squeeze off a reliable shot. Feet. Perhaps not even that. and by then he knew it would be too late. The longer he held it, the surer he was that a creature was going to jump out of the darkness and devour him right then and there. Jerry leaned in towards the fire, and the flames licked his face, casting an orange glow upon his skin.
"Do you have any silver bullets in that pea shooter of yours?"
he said, his voice low. The tremor in Gordon's hands had reached his voice. "What the hell are you talking about?"
"For the werewolves, it's the only way to kill them."
Jerry touched a finger to the center of his forehead.
Bang. Right between the eyes.
"But I thought you said..." Jerry smiled.
"Chill,"
he said, then laughed at his choice of words. "Right. You're joking. I get it." Gordon popped out the magazine, checked it, then snapped it back in place. "No silver bullets. Only got a couple of regulars." Jerry shook his head.
"No good. They'll just bounce right off. May as well toss that away for all the good it'll do."
"How do you know so much about fairy tales, anyway?"
"I used to read a lot back in the day,"
Jerry said.
"But I got too many blisters."
Gordon smiled thinly. Funny guy. He looked at his friend's insulated gloves and wished again that he had remembered to pack his. He rubbed his hands together, trying to generate a little heat, but the cold had sapped his energy, just like Jerry told him it would. He stuck them in his armpits for a quick blast of warmth.
"Sounds like a whole pack of them out there,"
Jerry piped up. "I thought you couldn't hear anything."
"I didn't want to scare you, Gordon. There's a lot of them out there, you know, and they're closer now. Much closer."
"Great." Gordon checked all around him so fast he thought his head was going to come off his shoulders. "Now you're starting to give me the willies."
"You know, legend has it their noses and ears are so keen, they don't really need their eyes at all."
"Who?"
"Werewolves."
"You can quit the campfire ghost stories, Jerry. It's not funny anymore. Let's just wait for the guys to arrive, all right?" Jerry looked up from the flame, his eyes now two bright red circles pulsating behind the dark plastic of his glasses like a heartbeat. He shifted uncomfortably beneath the heavy coat he was wearing, as if his body was trying to escape into the cold. "What the hell's happening to you?" Jerry stood up with a fresh enthusiasm.
"A wolf's gotta eat. You said yourself Eddie and the gang won't be here for a couple of hours. You wouldn't want me to go hungry, would you?"
His eyes burned a bolder flame than the one they had struck earlier that night to keep them warm. And now Jerry smiled, his teeth a lot longer and sharper than Gordon remembered.
"But I'm your best friend,"
Gordon pleaded, moving back. He nearly tripped over his desire to escape.
"Sure you are. Don't worry, buddy. I won't let the others get you. They'd rip you apart, tear you to pieces before killing you. They'd make a game out of it. I won't do that to you. I'll make it quick."
Jerry took off his glasses and threw them into the fire. The blood-red glow grew until it filled the sockets of his eyes. They searched the snow like headlamps.
"I promise you won't feel a thing."
In the distance, further along the ridge, a howl broke the sound of the wind. Gordon headed towards it, on legs that wouldn't run, and with a scream that froze in his throat.
I've heard that most murder victims are murdered by someone they know. I don't know if that's true, but I suppose it makes sense. I don't think I've ever read a book or seen a film where the werewolf actually wants to kill his friends. This story made a refreshing change. Aaron Cole's 13 Days of Horror event is in full swing over at aaroncolelive.blogspot.com. We'll be featuring some of the submitted stories in a Halloween episode soon. There's loads more great stuff on the horizon, including stories and poems from C. Deskin Rink, Geo Clark, and Barbara Roden, who features in the latest Mammoth Book of Best New Horror 21, compiled by Stephen James, which has just been released. More about that soon. But in the meantime, go buy a copy. It's an essential purchase for anyone who wants to keep up to date with what's going on in the genre. Many thanks to our new friend of the show, Dawn, who donated this week. Visit the forums and comment on the story or anything else. Thanks also for comments from Early Days Yet about the audio levels in the show. We hope it's better this week. Please, if you have any ideas or feedback for the show, let us know at forums.castmacabre.org. This show is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Share it, but don't modify it or exchange it for money or services. Music by Pain Factor and from MusicAlley.com. And we've used Paul Newman's track Portico for the background music again. If you're listening to this in the darkness of your bedroom, I think I just saw someone standing at the foot of your bed. Yes, John, I'm speaking to you. That should have suitably freaked out all the Johns subscribed to the show.
I'm going to have to let everyone know that these two Yanks, they don't understand our culture. Oh, Jesus, are we supposed to be Scottish?
Well, we're not. It's too late now. Trousers, put that thing away, will you? So help me, you'll shoot your dick off.
Just the two of us.
Because you like it when I come.
Oh, wait, OT, would you mind editing all that out?